Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
So very, very significant is, well, I think it's quite significant in that our sleep sometimes maybe reflects many aspects of our lives. In terms of our general health, are we perhaps overweight? Do we have some form of obstructive sleep concerns? Are we in the right frame of mind? Are we maybe very, very anxious? And it certainly, I would imagine, is a significant barometer on how we are doing. And that's one of the reasons that I am looking forward to chatting to our next guest, who is Dr. Jeremy Bidas, a psychiatrist, sleep expert. There's a thought. As a kid, you know, I know a lot of guys want to be pilots and firemen and soccer players and play for Liverpool. Does anybody want to be a sleep expert?
I think we all want to be sleep experts because sleep is that important to us.
Right.
And if we could ace our sleep each night, I think we'd be doing well. On the other hand, I think if we go through a night and we don't have a perfect night's sleep, it's okay. We've always got tomorrow night. The main thing is not to be too anxious about it all.
Mm.
I'll just highlight some of the key elements at play here from a neurobiological perspective to give us the landscape, and then everything becomes a lot more understandable.
Great.
So we don't really think of ourselves as having a gearbox, but mm-hmm. we do. We're either in sleep mode or in wake mode. And we do very well when we're in one of those gears only. If we're sleeping well, and when we're supposed to be asleep, we're sound asleep. And when we're awake, we're wide awake, then we're doing well. When everything starts to get a little bit mixed up,
confused,
and we're partially awake at night and partially asleep during the day, you know, that's when we stop functioning that well. So if we're thinking about, well, how does the body sort of control that mechanism? What is that gearbox? How does it all work? we can talk shortly about the why sleep is so important and what is happening when we are asleep, mm-hmm. what is actually being rejuvenated and refreshed overnight.
Right, so let's start there because it's important to understand what the value is. Otherwise, why bother?
Yeah, so we, all of us, approach life every day. We have new experiences. When we go to sleep, we're integrating those new experiences, the new things we've learned about the world, to inform our choices tomorrow, and integrating all of that data with our previous waking data. So we've got a good map with which to wake up and approach the world the next day. So one of the things that happens when we're asleep, if you imagine we've got a mental scratch pad, and as we're going about our day, we're holding a lot of data and we're having a lot of experiences, that data needs to then be cleaned through, integrated, and moved from the scratch pad, our working memory, to longer term memory banks in the brain, so that when we wake up the next day, we've got a fresh page ready to absorb everything that is going on around us. So that's reason number one. Reason number two is the brain is a very sophisticated data processing system and data storage system, and the way our neurons, our brain cells, communicate with each other or interact with each other is via electrical. We get electrical activity traveling through a neuron. A neuron's firing at a certain rate, and then it sends a chemical messenger to the next neuron in the chain. But over the course of the day, all of our neurons start to become a bit more excitable, and they're firing up a bit more. And if we didn't sleep, that electrical activity would just keep increasing until we actually started having seizures. So if one is totally sleep deprived, you're at risk of seizures. Overnight, it's all rebalanced.
And that's why I imagine that horrible horrible test that in order to precipitate, if they want to check if somebody is epileptic, where they don't let them sleep for the night.
Yes, yep. And then the third thing, really, coming back to the sort of data integration, the things that are very important to us are obviously working out how to get what we need from the world and how to fend off any threats. Fending off any threats is probably the higher priority. So overnight, when we're in REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep, we're totally paralyzed. But as far as our brain is concerned, we're wide awake and we're running away, or we're climbing trees, or we're fighting off threats whilst we are paralyzed, so that we're not actually jumping around in our bed. And we're simulating, you know, various threats, so that the next day, again, we're all primed and ready to respond in the right way based on, you know, the experiences of the previous day.
So what's the difference then between the deep sleep and REM?
So different things go on in different stages of sleep. In deep sleep, a lot of physiological reset is taking place, and we're not as paralyzed. Rapid eye movement sleep is just one element. It's the cherry on the top, really. And in each sleep cycle, of which we might have four or five a night, at the end of the sleep cycle, we have a period of rapid eye movement sleep, and that is when we are sort of fully paralyzed. Over the course of the night, as we progress through our sleep cycles, the REM component increases. So really, that first part of the night is heavily concentrated towards non-rapid eye movement sleep, a sort of very deep state of sleep. And I would say, if you're going to wake up feeling very refreshed the next day, very important that you get in, you know, that first cycle at the right time, because that's really where the deep restorative physiological.
What does it mean at the right time?
So, excellent question. Thank you. So let's come back to where we started, which was how is sleep actually controlled? There is a substance called adenosine. The brain is working its way through lots of fuel over the course of the day in the form of glucose. Mm-hmm. Adenosine is a glucose byproduct. When glucose is burnt through, it produces adenosine. Adenosine, the more adenosine we have in our system, in our brain, the more we want to go to sleep. So counteracting that, so that we're not progressively becoming more tired during the day, is the circadian rhythm, which is that brings us back to the gearbox, which is pumping our brain full of wake-up chemicals during the daytime, counteracting accumulating levels of adenosine. And then on a 24-hour clock basis, that gearbox switches into reverse or into sleep mode. Suddenly there's nothing keeping us awake. There's mm-hmm. no drive pushing our brain to keep awake. And we've got loads of adenosine. And at that point, when it happens, if you happen to be in bed in a good environment for sleep, that is the perfect time to be getting off to sleep, and everyone's different in that respect.
So it doesn't mean that, because I've read articles or read things that says, you know, your most important time is that time of night. It actually is more about your own rhythm, which leads me on to, I guess, the question about how much sleep is enough. I've never been able to sleep. I remember as a kid being awake for hours upon hours, and even as an adult, some nights just don't really get much. Well, most nights I don't, partly because I'm up at 4 a.m. for the show, but I can do the show because I don't particularly need a huge amount of sleep. But it always makes me panic because my watch is forever telling me I need attention. My sleep needs attention in one form or another, but I am pretty functional, and it doesn't seem to have an impact. How do we know if we're convincing ourselves, which I might well be doing, or that naturally we don't need so much sleep?
So it comes back to the idea of sleep and sleep state and wake state being two sides of the same coin.
Okay.
If one is sleeping well, getting enough sleep, getting enough quality to one's sleep, one is going to be waking well. So if you are cognitively doing okay during the day, you feel sharp, you feel you've got cognitive resources, emotionally you're in a good place, nice and stable, feeling good.
I don't know if I've ever been accused of being stable, but that's something different maybe.
Yeah. So I think that should be the barometer. If you're waking well and you're living well, then by definition you must be sleeping well.
Right. Okay. Garen, one of our listeners, asking, how accurate are these watches? I spoke to a friend of mine the other day, and he said to me he's very worried. He doesn't know how he slept because he left his watch at the office. So he didn't sleep with his watch, and he's got now therefore no idea, which struck me as being a little problematic in of itself. But how accurate are these watches?
I think they're reasonably accurate at what they do. They can sort of probably tell whether you're moving around, and maybe to some degree based on your movement, what stage of sleep you've spent time in over the course of the night. So I think it's a nice little touch, but it's absolutely not a necessity. And I would say once people start to get anxious, you know, around their sleep, you know, that's never a good thing. So I think if someone finds it helpful and they think, yay, you know, I had a really good sleep last night and that's what the watch is telling me to, perfect. If you're feeling okay and your watch is telling you otherwise, I wouldn't take too much notice of the watch.
Right. Yep. Right. If somebody comes to you as a patient or as somebody who's concerned about their sleep, there's so many reasons. There's physiological, there's biological, there's weight, there's hormonal issues, menopausal, there is anxiety. There's so many reasons that this could be a problem. How do you start? Where do you begin this process of trying to eliminate what the issues are and what they aren't?
Yep. So there is the Swiss cheese theory of airline disasters, which suggests that there's lots of protective measures in place that stop an airline dropping out, you know, an airplane dropping out the sky. But each of them have vulnerabilities, being the hole in that slice of Swiss cheese.
Right.
It's only when they all line up, you know, and you've got the perfect hole right through all the slices, you know, that disasters happen. And I would say it's the opposite. We could think of it as the opposite with sleep. You kind of want all of the holes in your cheese to line up in a perfect style, and then you're going to get a good night's sleep. So there is a checklist, and there are a whole bunch of parameters that need to be in place, but they're all fairly simple. So an assessment would involve trying to sort of pick off which are the slices of cheese or which are the areas that are currently problematic. And yes, it is the case that you only need one thing that isn't going too well to sort of see you not sleep that well. So, but each of the things on their own are addressable and treatable. And I would say one of the most difficult bits to treat is, you know, you can have essentially coming back to the sleep mechanism. When we're talking about our brain being pumped full of wake up chemicals or pumped full of sleep chemicals, that sleep switch comes up, you know, gets turned on an automatic timer. There's a time switch. So when your body is primed to go to sleep, that happens on an involuntary basis. However, if you're feeling very aroused, very anxious, very angry, very on edge, then your arousal switch, which is keeping you awake during the day, just doesn't go off. It's too powerful for your sleep switch to come along and switch it off. So if you then start stressing more about your sleep, am I going to sleep tonight? What time am I going to go to sleep?
Welcome to my world. I've got to be up at 4. Okay, it's already 11 o'clock. I'm watching the time go.
So the trick is, this is one of the key tricks, to realize that sleep and your sleep switch coming on is involuntary. All you need to do is get your arousal levels down. Don't think about sleep. Think about something incredibly relaxing. Imagine yourself in the most blissful, perfect place. Yeah, but what about if this is happening? In this scenario, you're the film director, it isn't happening. And suddenly your arousal levels drop, and then it's the morning because you fell asleep.
That's amazing. That's an incredible tool. And quite a few questions. How vital is sleep when recovering from workouts?
It's known that sort of having enough sleep on a consistent basis is incredibly important for our physical health, for muscle repair, for our cardiovascular health, for our blood pressure, for our, you know, appetite, eating. So I would say it's as important as anything else.
Yeah. Right. And that obviously didn't come from me, that question. And Howard, please can you ask your guest how one can go off sleeping pills? That is from Lynn in Kimberley. So just before we even ask the assist in getting off the sleeping pills, how effective is sleep that is medicated sleep? Is it the same quality? I've always wondered this.
So there's coming back to the neurobiology, there's two things that sleeping pills might be doing. They are either going to be boosting the sleep switch in your brain, you know, pumping, making your brain experience a greater, sleep drive at night, or they're going to be capping off your arousal levels. Right. So there are some addictive medications out there, Z drugs or benzodiazepines, that on a very temporary basis will improve, you know, the sort of GABA, which is the brain calming, central nervous system depressant chemical that sees you better able to override your arousal switch.
Right.
But the brain adjusts, and a few weeks later, those medications aren't working. And if you stop taking them, your brain misses them.
It becomes, you almost rebound in the worst possible way.
Yeah, and then there are other medications that aren't addictive. The brain can't wiggle out of them being there, can't adapt. Some strong, effective antihistaminergic medications that are going to work much more consistently on a long-term basis. So I would say if one's sleeping well and one's got through the acute episode that was keeping one up at night, but one's been on these Z drugs for longer than a few weeks, then one needs to step down the Z drugs
slowly.
Sort of very slowly. If, on the other hand, the Z drugs have stopped working, your sleep is as bad as it was, but you're still on the Z drugs, then you're going to need a better medication in place, perhaps, to see you sleep through the night. And in the background, we can gradually reduce down your Z drugs with you actually sleeping better on perhaps a medication that's going to work for you more.
So I think the answer there, Lynn, is it depends on what you are on, and maybe chat to your doctor about that to see how you can do that. What about melatonin?
Yeah, melatonin is a natural hormone that actually is part of the process that sees the timing of our sleep occur. So when we sleep at night, that is when it's safer to sleep. We need to be out hunting and gathering during the day. Nighttime, it makes sense to sleep. So once daylight stops hitting our retina, we've all got different clock genes, and a certain period of time later, melatonin is released. Melatonin sort of switches on our sleep center to start pumping out that GABA to our brain, which is our sleep switch coming on. And if we take prescribed melatonin or over-the-counter melatonin, that has a soporific effect. So it's, you know, it does promote sleep. A tiny, tiny dose timed at the right time can help actually shift our sleep phase. So some people, for example, they think they might have insomnia, get into bed at 11, you know, they've wound down, but they're wide awake, they can't fall asleep till 3 a.m. That's actually because biologically their sleep phase is occurring several hours later than the rest of the population. There are a few techniques to advance one's sleep phase so that it's compatible with getting to work on time or getting to university or school on time. And that would involve a tiny dose of melatonin that is gradually moved earlier in the day.
What determines our, you know, we've got night owls, we've got early morning people. What determines that? Is that cultural? Is that a nurture thing, or is that something that is encoded in us?
So I think it's the technical answer is that it's very much biological. So there is a clock gene, and after light stops hitting your retina, depending on how long your clock genes run, it might be a couple of hours, a few hours later that you get melatonin release. And that there's going to be a familial element there. So if both of your parents are night owls, you're likely to be a night owl. If they're morning larks, you're likely to be a morning lark. Having said that, whatever time one is naturally primed to fall asleep, one can behaviorally override that so that one isn't feeling sleepy because one is stimulating oneself, or one's had caffeine, or one's, you know, whatever it is that one is doing, you're not going to be falling asleep when your body wants to be going to sleep, when it's the perfect time to fall asleep. That's not going to shift your sleep phase, but it will keep you up longer than you should be.
Is there a rule of thumb in terms of caffeine, how late in the day, or is that absolutely dependent on how you process it?
So it has a very long half-life, and it essentially is an antagonist to adenosine, which I mentioned earlier. When you get to your sleep phase being switched on, you want as much adenosine around as possible, because that, in combination with nothing keeping you awake, is what sends you off to sleep. If you've got caffeine in your system, it counteracts the adenosine, so your brain doesn't really know it's tired, nothing pushing you to fall off to sleep. I would always suggest to patients definitely no caffeine after midday, particularly if they've got, you know, they're having difficulties getting off to sleep.
Midday seems a little extreme.
Yeah.
It's like the Haredi version of caffeine approach. Midday.
Yeah. Midday.
Wow.
Midday. That would be the suggestion. Again, people don't realize the effect caffeine is having on their sleep until they actually try it. And then suddenly sleep feels different. So I think there's definitely, you know, we all sleep many nights in our life. There's definitely room for experimentation,
right,
trying different things. But I would certainly say if you're having caffeine, you could even go earlier than that. You might see there is an immediate beneficial impact on your sleep.
Beverly wants to know, is melatonin safe for kids under 10?
I think that's something to be discussed with your GP, but I think what I often say to patients who are concerned about medicating for their sleep deprivation, you know, running on...
It's pretty dangerous.
That's dangerous. Mm. You know, you're going to get inflammation, you know, it's not good for your health, not sleeping. Right. So it's a balancing act. There's always a cost-benefit analysis. And sometimes, you know, a short course of medication can just get...
Reset
everything, the habits back in place, the anxiety reduced, and then one can sort of withdraw the aid.
What I'm loving is that in the full 25 minutes that we've been speaking, you haven't used the word or the expression sleep hygiene. It's just one of those things that irritate me because, you know, because hygiene implies cleanliness, which means the opposite is not cleanliness. So I don't really like it, and I just find it, it's a bit judgy, and I don't really think we all understand what that means. So maybe I can read on my Kindle and still be okay to go to sleep. Maybe, you know, watching something on social media, it doesn't allow me to go to sleep. What is this idea of sleep preparedness?
Yeah, so I agree with you. The term's fairly awful, mm-hmm. not a nice term. I think perhaps what is a nicer term is just having a lot of TLC for yourself around your particular sleep needs. So we're all built differently. If you've got a couple sharing a bedroom, you know, different temperatures, different duvets, different, you know, pillow hardness, mattress hardness, noise, you know, people are very differently affected by noise. The number of patients I've got who like falling asleep to a podcast.
Yeah,
it's incredible. Or watching something is pretty high.
My kids do this.
So I think it's quite individual. The important thing is to have a lot of faith in what works for you, right, and being kind to yourself and making sure you've set things up for yourself in the right way, and that you negotiate noise levels, temperature in the bedroom, you know, so that everyone's
kind of can happy. Be a bit of a negotiation. It's not always that simple, but that is where we do need to leave it. I was chatting to Dr. Jeremy Bider. He is a psychiatrist. He's a sleep expert, been answering some of my questions and some of your questions.